You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Front One. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, June 27th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City, where, of course, it has been raining cats and dogs all through the weekend. Hurricanes, tornadoes, massive flooding, all because the New York State Senate made legal human rights for all members of New York State. And the bill was subsequently signed by Governor Cuomo. It is marriages falling apart as we speak. The institution of marriage on the rocks, as it were, in this new era of complete insanity. It's crazy. Guys selling umbrellas to deflect the cats and dogs that are raining down upon us. Actually, wait a second. I'm sorry. No, it's actually not raining. It's actually a nice day. I don't know what happened. That's right, folks. New York State becomes, I think it's the fifth state in the...
I think the sixth.
The sixth state. Six, yeah. But it has actually doubled the number of Americans who now live in a part of the country which affords equal rights to gay people. Sort of stunningly obvious. Stunningly overdue. And that's about it. I mean, we will be talking to Evan Wolfson, the president of Freedom to Marry, author of Why Marriage Matters, in just moments. But it's very, makes me proud to be a New Yorker. I don't know why it took so long here. We didn't have to go through any interim stages where we said, let's give gay people, you know, three-quarters rights. And we'll see how that goes, and we'll give them 7/8 rights. No, we just jumped to the 8/8 of rights, or 4/4, or even 1/1, however you want to calculate that. Today on the program, war never loses. We will talk about that. But apparently, clean elections, they do lose. Today, the Supreme Court, just literally moments ago, handed out a ruling in McComish v. Bennett. It is a case that came from Arizona challenging the trigger fund provision of Arizona's clean election system. Essentially, if a candidate is outspent in Arizona by an opponent who has their own money or an outside group, they receive trigger funds to ostensibly help level the playing field. In other words, so that corporate money cannot dominate an election. Now, of course, in this iteration of the Supreme Court, there are five members of the Supreme Court who say that money is speech. And as such, if you have someone who is given money from the state, their speech becomes as worthwhile as the other person's speech. Essentially, the argument is that in some way, this chills the speech in that it would convince a candidate who is a billionaire not to spend his own money or her own money, because it might trigger the other person getting as much money, the other candidate, and therefore they would be a little bit reluctant to spend their money, i.e. speak more. And so this was shot down. It is, I'm going to give you an opportunity to guess how the ruling broke down. It was 5-4. Try and guess which side voted 5 and which side voted 4. Just again, you know, another reminder and just how important the Supreme Court is. People are still parsing the decision to find out how sweeping it is. One would expect in normal times a Supreme Court to narrowly address the issue. In other words, does this specific provision, is it constitutional? Aside from a warped view of free speech and the First Amendment that this court has, they also have a tendency to issue sweeping decisions that go beyond the mandate that they're talking about. Remember, folks, you want to protest at a political convention? Well, your speech is not abridged if you're hemmed in, penned in by chain-link fences, kept far away from the event. That's not abridgment of your free speech. But if you want the government to provide funds for a candidate who's being outspent 10, 12, 30, 100, a million to one by corporations or the rich, whoa. You might as well sew up that rich person's mouth. You're abridging their speech so much. All right, folks, when we return, we'll be right back with Evan Wolfson, the president of Freedom to Marry. Back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Welcome to the program, Evan Wolfson. He is the president of Freedom to Marry, author of Why Marriage Matters, on this move by New York State into the 21st century, providing really human rights to all its citizens now. Welcome to the program, Evan.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Evan, if you will, give us a little, just a brief sense of how this happened and what the history has been in this state of the right to marry for all its citizens.
Right. Well, I mean, New Yorkers have been seeking the freedom to marry for decades now, and this is something that obviously matters to couples, it matters to kids, it matters to the non-gay people in our lives, our family members, our neighbors, our friends, our employers and others who engage with us and who want to see everybody treated equally. And over time, we have now come to the point where almost 60% of New Yorkers, according to several recent polls, support the freedom to marry. So that's the backdrop of momentum and public opinion against which a variety of legal and political efforts over the last several years have been mounted to end this discrimination in New York's law. There was a very important set of court cases brought by couples around the state, led by Lambda Legal and the ACLU. And those ran up against lower courts agreeing that the denial was wrong, but ultimately the state's high court, in a very fractured vote, deciding that the New York Constitution did not prevent the legislature from discriminating. So then there have been several efforts in the legislature over the last several years. In 2009, we came close but ran aground in the Senate. And then over the last 2 years, we've worked very, very hard to change the minds and in some cases change the faces of some of the handful of the state senators whose votes we needed to shift. And this year, they did shift. We saw seven senators change their votes and vote in alignment with the majority of New Yorkers to end the discrimination. And I would say the one other giant factor this year that really made a big difference was having Governor Cuomo run on the freedom to marry as a candidate, seeking a mandate for ending this discrimination, and then, once in office, actually fulfilling his promise and really spending political capital and putting his team to work with a broad coalition of organizations, Freedom to Marry, the Empire State Pride Agenda, Human Rights Campaign, Marriage Equality New York, Log Cabin Republicans, and others, joined by labor unions and business leaders, all in this concerted New Yorkers United for Marriage coalition effort led by the governor to end this discrimination, and that's what resulted in the victory we saw Friday night.
Yeah, there's a fascinating piece in the New York Times which outlines a lot of the process, I mean, at least to the extent that's available for public consumption. And so this, while New York State, obviously not the first state, I guess the sixth state in the country that has ended this discrimination, it more than doubles the amount of citizens across the country who live in a state that ends this discrimination. And this is the first time that this has happened in a state that was controlled, or at least one of the houses of the legislature was controlled by Republicans.
Yes, that's exactly right. The New York's advance here, as you said, more than doubles the number of Americans living in a state where gay people can marry. We're going now as a country from 16 million to 35 million. We now have six states plus the District of Columbia, our nation's capital, where this discrimination has ended. And you're exactly right that this is the first time that a Republican-led chamber, the state Senate, voted to move forward on a marriage bill with Republicans providing the margin of victory on top of a broad number of Democrats. Virtually all but one Democrat voted in support of the freedom to marry. And in addition, as I said earlier, we saw business leaders speaking out alongside labor unions. We saw Republican donors and key figures in the party speaking out and really working hard to make this happen alongside Democrats. So this was a broad bipartisan effort to get that handful of senators to vote to end discrimination after the Assembly had already voted a marriage bill four times.
Now, aside from, and which I think is really the overriding factor, aside from the fact that it simply it ends discrimination in creating essentially a second class citizenry. But what are the sort of the tangible, what are both the tangible and I guess the sort of more cultural benefits to being able to say that I can get married, even if I choose not to?
Right. Well, first of all, when you say you're married, everyone knows who you are in relationship to the primary person you're building a life with. This is a statement of love and commitment and connectedness so important that most people wear its symbol on their hand. And young people, gay and non-gay, grow up dreaming of a life together with another person who's going to love them and care for them and whom we will love and take care of. And when gay people are sent a message, you can't have that dream. And even if you may happen to find someone, it will never be treated with full respect. It's not really as good. It's not secure. It's not respected in the law. That's a terribly destructive message to be sending to young people. And New York now has said we're not going to send that message anymore. Instead, what this state is going to say to its citizens, to its family members, and to the world at large is everyone here shares in the freedom to marry with the same rules, the same responsibilities, and the same respect. And of course, freedom to marry does mean freedom to marry, and that means you sometimes may decide marriage is not for you. And there are plenty of non-gay people who don't want to marry or who marry and then decide they don't want to be married. And gay people should have that same mix of abilities to decide how to pursue happiness and build a life of commitment as any other person does.
What specific rights now, in addition, I mean, I actually think that that aspect of it is the most important, but there are actually tangible rights that are available to married people that aren't available to single people.
That's right. The marriage and the freedom to marry for gay people as for non-gay people is first and foremost about love and commitment and family and making a statement of accountability and connection to another person and the family that you build around you together. But at the same time, marriage does also bring a vast array of legal and economic protections and responsibilities that affect every area of life, from birth to death, with taxes in between. And these legal consequences unfold at both the state level, which is where you get your marriage license and enter into a marriage, and at the federal level, where the federal government then, in ordinary course, takes a couple that's legally married and says, you're now going to enter into this federal safety net. So at the state level, the kinds of protections and responsibilities that marriage triggers affects taxation, access to health care, responsibilities and rules with regard to parenting, rules about how to end a relationship, a difficult passage where people often need guidance and support and protection. And the list literally goes on in the thousands and thousands at the state level. In addition, there are, as I mentioned, more than 1,138 federal protections and responsibilities, things like ability to share in and have access to a partner's Social Security, the ability to marry and be secure in your commitment to a person who may have happened to be born in another country when it comes to immigration rules, access to health coverage.
Well, I'm curious, do married people in this state, gay married people, do they now qualify for those federal rights because they're in the state, or is that still something that DOMA curtails?
Right. No, that's was the right thing to raise because of federal discrimination through the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, the law passed in 1996. Gay couples who are legally married are treated unlike any other married couples and excluded from these 1,100-plus federal protections and responsibilities because of that discriminatory law. And so part of Freedom to Marry's work looking forward, building on the momentum from New York, is to end that federal discrimination that still burdens people who live in states that have ended state marriage discrimination, states like New York. So we need to tear down that federal law, because under that federal law, it says there's going to be a gay exception to the way the federal government treats married couples. All other married couples, when they get married, which they get married according to the laws of a state, you get a license from the state and you get married, and then you're legally married, you're treated as married in every other state, even though you're married in one state.
Right.
And then the federal government normally also treats you as what you are, married. But gay couples, even when legally married, are subject to this gay exception in the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, and therefore denied the Social Security, the immigration, the tax treatment, the access to health care. And that's going to be part of the work ahead.
And that is DOMA is under attack both – well, I don't know how much legislatively, hopefully, but at the very least, from the judiciary, because there's clearly a constitutional problem in about 14 different ways with this thing. Because A, the federal government is trumping the states in a way that we don't see really in any other instance, as far as I can tell. And in terms of just that it's not that it's unconstitutional on its face.
That's right. It's an unconstitutional gay exception. It's a discrimination that lacks any justification. And you're right. The so-called Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, is being challenged in a cluster of court challenges, which have begun winning at the lower court and are making their way up the various court ladders in different court systems in different parts of the country. And at the same time, it is also being challenged in Congress, which passed the law originally and now needs to overturn it. Both chambers saw introduction earlier this year of the Respect for Marriage Act. Here in the House, it was introduced by Congressman Jerry Nadler. In the Senate, it was introduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein, one from New York, the other from California. And they both have large numbers of co-sponsors as we lay the groundwork in Congress to overturn the law. And either Congress or the courts can do it, and frankly, both of them should move and act quickly and tear down this discrimination.
And, you know, even today, Michelle Bachmann, oddly enough, as far as I could tell, inadvertently made the best argument for the unconstitutionality of DOMA, in that she said what happened in New York was fine, and this is why we need a constitutional amendment to codify discrimination against gay people, essentially. But, I mean, if she recognizes the need to actually have to change the Constitution to discriminate against a certain group of people in this country, and clearly any law that curtails that runs afoul to the Constitution. And the Obama administration has essentially decided, or the Department of Justice, I should say, has decided not to defend this law in court. Is that right?
Well, that's right, and they didn't just casually decide not to defend it. They did an extensive, serious review of the constitutionality of the law and concluded that, number one, sexual orientation discrimination has to be presumed to be unconstitutional, and therefore courts should look at laws that discriminate against gay people, that discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, with a skeptical eye, not just with a rubber stamp.
Right.
Taking that standard of review, taking that standard of heightened scrutiny, a more suspicious look as being the way a court needs to proceed, the administration then analyzed whether under that more skeptical eye, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act could stand up, and they concluded it cannot be defended. This discrimination is indefensible under the Constitution, and that's why they determined that the federal government will no longer be in court defending discrimination against people on the basis of their sexual orientation, starting with the so-called Defense of Marriage Act.
So, Evan, just give me a sense. I know we just got a minute here. We've got to wrap this up, but give me a sense. What do you think will be the next domino to fall? In other words, is this going to happen in the judiciary? Are we going to see other states? I find it hard to believe that we're going to see this. We're going to see DOMA repealed on a federal level through our legislature at this point. But what's the next thing we should be looking at? What's the next milestone that in the groups that are advocating for this end to discrimination? What's the next step?
Right. Well, first of all, momentous as this New York win was, and much as it gives us so much wind in our sails moving forward, we still have to do the work. And that work, Freedom to Marry has long said, needs to proceed on what we call our roadmap to victory. And this is not some secret strategy. It's on our website. People can go to freedomtomarry.org, look for roadmap to victory, and see how history tells us this discrimination is going to come to an end if we do the work. And it talks about the three tracks of work we need to do together, not one after the other, but all together. And the interplay of these three tracks are what bring us to national victory. And the three tracks of work are to win more states, to grow the majority for marriage, and to tackle federal discrimination. And in each of these areas, there are various ways of moving forward. There are obviously several states in play moving to end marriage discrimination and where this question is being debated.
What are those states?
Well, some of the states range from Oregon to Maine, Maryland to Rhode Island, New Jersey, right across the river from New York, has civil union and now has an official government commission in civil union, in New Jersey reporting that civil union doesn't work. And we expect that there will be a court case filed by couples saying, you know, this civil union does not fulfill the Constitution command of equality because it doesn't protect our families. And your own commission says so. So New Jersey needs to follow New York's example and end this discrimination. So we're going to see activity and work and opportunities to move this forward in several of the states. At the same time, as you rightly said earlier, we've got these federal court cases moving forward. We need to create the climate of encouragement that gives the judges and elected officials the opportunity to do their part, to rise to fairness. And so by engaging more Americans in conversations about why marriage matters and the living example of families helped and no one hurt in places like New York, we create the climate that encourages courts to rule right, that encourages elected officials, including members of Congress, to vote against the Defense of Marriage Act or to tear down the laws like the bipartisan majorities in New York did over the weekend.
Evan Wolfson, president of Freedom to Marry, author of Why Marriage Matters. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we've got to take a break. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. When we come back, we will talk about this and more. Apparently, to be a Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin, not very different from being a member of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I will explain when we return.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
All right, we're back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. I know I got an IM about this, a side flash up, but it's the first thing that, you know, one of the most interesting elements about this, and this is not in any way to downplay the momentous occasion of New York joining five other states in not discriminating against a specific group of its people. And I think on this program I've mentioned, at least on one occasion, that Myla had a good friend in preschool who had two mommies. And Nikki's good friends with one of the mommies. She actually wrote a piece on Huffington Post, which I did not know. She and her partner, I guess her wife, legally speaking now, were the first lesbian couple ever listed in the New York Times wedding section 10 years ago. And maybe we'll get a chance to speak to her later in the program. Or, you know, maybe I'll do I'm going to be taking next week off and I'm going to have interviews. I will do a pre-record with her. She couldn't do it today because she was actually had vacation this week on Fire Island. But her piece is in the Huffington Post by Alicia Salazar. She's a doctor and author of Back to Life. I don't know if Myla ever was aware that they were not married, but there was no stigma attached. When Myla actually at times has sort of lamented the fact that her friend actually has, two mommies and actually two daddies, and resents the fact that she only has one mommy and daddy. There's no stigma attached to this. And now the idea that they're married, I don't know at what point Myla would realize, like, hey, wait a second, they're not married legally. But the stigma is gone. And, it's simply now not just in this state, obviously, but across the country, it is a matter of time. I mean, it is moving in the right direction. But the interesting thing here, too, is that one of the sort of fulcrums of this story, of it happening in New York, is the idea that wealthy Republican donors, big money donors, basically sat down with Cuomo and said, we will go to a couple of these Republicans and tell them, we've got your back. And it's a fascinating story because people are comparing what Cuomo has done in New York in terms of fighting for this versus Obama. And at the end of the day, the most interesting thing to me about this, again, please understand I'm saying this without minimizing the implications of people getting their rights, because I think it's an enormous victory. But someone IM'd me about this, and this is a theme that has been reoccurring, and I started to touch on it in my interviews at Netroots Nation, which we'll be playing next week too, briefly. Or maybe I guess it was a little bit on the ones that we played live. But the idea of gay marriage and of socially liberal social views, less so with abortion, but to a certain extent, being used as a way of placating the liberal base, despite the fact that they're following very illiberal or very unprogressive economic policies. Cuomo is a perfect example of that. Cuomo has instituted incredibly draconian and austere cuts in this state. He has attacked unions. He has been essentially like a Republican of old. And this is consistent with that. And one of the best things about taking this off the table, in my estimation, is that we can now judge these politicians based upon what they're doing for the broader economic goals. And it's an interesting debate, you know, back and forth. People are talking about, well, it wasn't really Republican money. They were sort of, you know, people who support Democrats. Well, yes. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's liberal money. That's the real rub there. Meanwhile, last week the House refused to sanction U.S. participation in the NATO campaign of airstrikes in Libya, but they also refused to cut off funding for these strikes. So, in wonderful fashion, Congress once again abdicates its role in declaring war, in enforcing the War Powers Act, and in any type of leadership position. They all just kick the can down the road because nobody wants to stick out as being anti-war, anti-killing, anti-bombing. That's simply not the way you move ahead in this country. So the Congress barked but did not bite. As far as I can tell, that's the case with just about all of them. Meanwhile, an interesting report from NPR. You know the billions of dollars we're cutting for, like, pregnant women, poor children, food for them, all that stuff. Well, we know that at least $20 billion of that money, God knows how many firefighters that could pay for, how many pregnant women it could feed, paying for air conditioning in Iraq and Afghanistan. $20 billion a year. Now, look, I'm not saying they shouldn't have air conditioning. I'm saying, why do we have them there in the first place? But again, war never loses in this country. So shut your mouth, Sam Cedar. Your crazy talk. Meanwhile, you remember the story, in Wisconsin, there was the big Supreme Court race between Prosser and Kloppenberg. Kloppenberg lost. One of the stories that came out about Supreme Court Justice David Prosser, Supreme Court of Wisconsin, that came out right before the election was that he called the Chief Justice of Wisconsin, a woman named Abramson, Shirley Abramson, called her a bitch. And a total bitch, threatened to destroy her. And before the election, he came out and said he, quote, probably overreacted while accusing Abramson of being masters at deliberately goading people into perhaps incautious statements. So in other words, these man-eaters, these black widows, speaking, I guess, of another justice, Bradley and Abramson, they purposely goaded him into calling them bitches. That's what they do. They get their female talents in there. They think that with a law degree and a judgeship and a black robe, you can goad anybody into calling them bitches. It's their problem, not his. Well, now a story comes out in the Wisconsin Journal Sentinel, I guess. He, in the run-up to the vote, remember they needed to get Prosser on to this divided court 5-4 again so that he could okay the, by all accounts, unconstitutional Wisconsin constitutional passage of David Walker's, Scott Walker's, I should say, anti-union attack on collective bargaining bill. And so they rushed him in. He wrote the 9-page, I guess it was, decision on it. It was widely criticized as being partisan and having very little reasoning. And apparently in the run-up to that, it is being reported that he tried to, well, not tried, he choked, physically choked one of the other female Supreme Court justices, this Ann Walsh Bradley. She said to him, there were other Supreme Court justices in her office. Apparently it was getting heated, and she said, would you please leave because you're out of control? Because the guy obviously has a history of not being able to contain himself. And so he grabbed her by the neck. Now he now claims, or people in his camp claim, that he didn't grab her by the neck. He tried to fend her off as she physically lunged at him. Picking up on that theme that these black widows, they goad you into calling them bitches and choking them. So apparently the case of the choking justice is now in front of a commission which could theoretically remove him from, I mean, and, you know, I think as far as the Republicans are concerned, well, mission accomplished, it doesn't matter. Even though we got this deeply, I mean, you're obviously deeply misogynist, right? I mean, if you're calling your colleagues on the Supreme Court bitches and then saying, I'm calling them bitches because they goaded me into it. And how do you goad a grown man into calling your colleagues bitches? It's like one of those, like a Chief Justice Prosser. It just said, what? What? What is it? I guess it would be like, it just say B? Bitches? What? Oh, you goaded me into that! Chief Justice Prosser, what do you, what is it? Could you, how do you pronounce B, itches? Bitches? Oh, you did it to me again! God! Poor Chief Justice Bitches. Prosser. Unbelievable. Blockbuster story on, I mean, this is the next Enron, the next bubble, the next essentially fraud that is being leveled upon the American people. I mean, certainly investors. And it will be ultimately the taxpayers again coming out of the natural gas drilling industry. New York Times has obtained memos and emails, internal memos and emails, both through investigations and apparently some whistleblowers, showing that the story that we have been told, the idea that we are sitting on so much cheap energy, this natural gas that just flows through the soil of America. We are sitting on top of just this wealth of riches. Which were obtained through open records requests or provided by industry consultants and analysis. These emails show that that's all a lie. That the wells that they're digging are depleting faster than, I mean, way faster than they projected. That they're going to have to be doing more fracking, that they're saying. That the cheap, the inexpensive quality of this natural gas is completely a mirage. So they're getting all these investors supposedly at cheap, because, you know, if I say to you, folks, I want you to invest in the Majority Report, forget about the membership for a minute, I want you to invest in the Majority Report, and I'll tell you why. Because there are millions of people, we've done market research, and we have indisputable proof that we have millions of consumers out there with a tremendous amount of disposable income who are telling our marketing consultants they are simply looking for a both humorous and informative podcast featuring guests that you can never hear in this format. And they are willing, all we need to do is reach them via direct mail or some other type of campaign. So you can buy into the Majority Report for a small investment. This is going to pay off in spades, ladies and gentlemen. You would be like, oh, I'm going to do this. But what happened if you started to see an email between me and Evan going like, man, hope nobody finds out that the consulting firm that we used to find out this information was basically Nikki. And she called three of her three people she knew, and they were all my parents and her parents. That would be bad. Or I sent an email to Matt going, man, these suckers, the money's pouring in. When do they find out that there's only four people out there who are really interested in a podcast about this stuff? Or if I was about to start getting government subsidies based upon the PowerPoint I made that showed that there are millions of people out there for podcasts, and this is going to help America. Well, that's essentially where we're at now. Or if I sent an email to Evan saying like, ooh, turns out that we're not going to just need to send an email. We're going to have to offer all sorts of membership benefits that are going to significantly cut into our profit margin. That is exactly what's revealed in this New York Times piece. Except for instead of membership benefits, it's going to be more fracking, which means more sludge, more pollution, more methane coming out of your faucets. And instead of there being only my family members who are interested in buying a membership to this show, I mean, instead of there being millions of people, it's just my my family. Instead of that in the analogy, it basically means that these wells are going to dry up 50 years quicker than it says they were. And then it's going to cost 5, 6, 10 times more to take this natural gas out of the ground, which is going to mean that it's that much more expensive, which means that all down the line, all those benefits of the cheap energy that's coming out of there are a lie. That's what this fracking story is about. We will do more on this in the coming coming days. Now we're going to go to our post show. Folks, if you can become a member, I am seriously, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I think we're just going to have to do it. There's no point in me talking about it. Very good chance in the next couple of weeks, the free show is going to drop down from 40 minutes, or in this case, 45 minutes. I mean, I went back and I saw, like, there was not a 40-minute show in the past 2 weeks.
No.
Hour and a half. 65 minutes. 55 minutes. We may have to go down to just the opening and the guest for freebies. Slightly change the model. Because we need more members. And, which means that you will hear less of me if you are not a member. And what we'll do is, we'll do the upfront intro segment, the guest segment. Then we will go to the members-only material. I'll do another 10, 20 minutes of news stories, like the fracking story, for instance. Like all the stories. Fracking, the Prosser, the war. Those stories. And then we'll go into IMs. So people are on the misconception that the membership show is just IMs. No. I do stories, IMs, trigger stories, then it's IMs, and phone calls at 646-257-3920. So changes are afoot, folks. Beat the rush. Become a member today. Please also don't forget, even if you're a super cheapy and you don't want to become a member, if you buy crap on Amazon, you can support the show by doing nothing that you're not already doing. So we go to majority.fm, click on the Amazon box, bookmark that. That becomes your Amazon site. Buy it. You'll never know just how much you're enriching, just how much you're funding my chateau on the Côte d'Azur or my chalet in Aspen or my private fishing campground in Ontario. A ski resort in Vancouver.
Your pied de terre.
My pied de terre in Pierre. Pied. My beachfront property in Kazuma. All right, folks. See you on the flip side. Don't forget also justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. See you on the flip side. You can IM me at majority.fm.